Blog Talk Radio.
What up, world? Welcome to another edition of the Bloody Knuckles Show, BK Show 1 on Twitter, presented by our motherfucking selves. We are self-made men, and we are, we are back, ladies and gentlemen, the motherfucking best in the business are back, and surprise, surprise, today we will be talking NBA instead of MMA because there's just too much going on. We got to finish the season with a bang. Just real quick, shout out to 319 Wine and Cheese, my business. Business is good, that's all you got to say. Also, check me out on Instagram, warrior-fit. Get yourself healthy. Get yourself in shape. It is fading through. Take your shirt off. Season. Let's go. Tonight on the show with me, I got the NBA draft expert, the man who told Indiana, you know what, let's load up and let's go at them boys, the Cavs. The man who found out Don Baker was really 28 years old. The man who told Shaquille O'Neal, maybe you should team up with Kobe Bryant. The man who told LeBron James you will triumph. The man that told Steph Curry, just stop trying. The man who told Draymond Green, you need to dive at them nuts, boys. Goddamn, because y'all ain't getting by them. He is Mr. Percy Love, a.k.a. the motherfucking instigator, a.k.a. the dirty rim protector, a.k.a. Mr. Get at your next, sir. Wu-Tang to the next level. What's up? Andrew Meredith, what's up, homie?
Yo, 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 what it do? Goddamn, did it feel good to say that? Very excited, Ryan, and to the fans. We do apologize that we haven't had a show in about 2 weeks. You know, you both your hosts, you know, we work that hard. We both work 40-plus hours a week, and it's hard, like, I'm just trying to get to move on. It's hard.
I'm not going to lie. My heart was broken, too, for a little bit.
Yeah.
I gave up on sports. I'm back, though.
We're back, as always, in sports. And, you know, to the MMA fans out there, don't worry. I'm going to be talking with Ryan. We're going to try and set up a midweek show that we can touch on, you know, all the fight news that we haven't talked about since the last show. But, however, any all the long-time listeners, fans know, me and Dr. Edwards love NBA, Ryan. We love it,
doctor.
And I just want to start with this, Ryan. There's something you touched on. I need to paint Dr.'s Edwards just for, you know, the final cap of the season.
Yes, sir.
Now, Ryan, to me, you know, you even called it in our group text when we were talking after that game six. That, Golden State wasn't going to win. They're banked up. Was hot.
Don't start me off with another heartbreak.
First question, this is all really talked about. You know, of course, tip my hat to the Cavs. I couldn't do that,
of course.
Because of all my family members and my dad, that was probably the happiest I'd ever seen him get this right.
Yeah.
Cleveland had not won a championship in anything.
Hey, Stipe Miocic.
Who
was at the Cavs parade. I like how he was at the Cavs parade.
But, what I was saying really quick, you know, I was happy for my dad and stuff. They had him win a championship. He was 13, and now he's almost 70. So that right there is pretty crazy, Ryan. But,
I gotta give a quick shout out to, because everyone on this show who's listened, you know, a long time, I know it's hard because we're sporadic at times, stuff like that, and we get listeners and they fall off, and maybe they come back, but you all know I'm a big LeBron hater. I gotta finally just tip my cap, put my full hawk to the side a little bit, and say, God damn it, LeBron, you did it, bud. I mean, you're not Michael Jordan. I'm not going to go
you're
like ESPN and forget. I'm not going to go to ESPN and act like Kobe Bryant's career never existed like they are currently, because people must have forgot Kobe Bryant owned the 2000s to about 2010 and beat one of the best teams ever, Boston. I know Golden State's stacked, but look at that Boston team and how goddamn good and stacked they really were. Tony Allen coming off the goddamn bench, Andrew. I got to tip my cap saying that I've always said LeBron James needed a Michael Jordan moment. He's always had the teammates. I'm not going to lie. His team was stacked. He has Kyrie Irving. He hits the big shot. Kyrie Irving came on. Ty Lue came on as an official. I mean, that was, I got to say, Ty Lue came on as a pretty damn good coach this offseason.
Yeah,
even though he had the best player in the world. I'm saying it now, best player in the world. They took advantage of Steph Curry. Steph Curry took a huge step back. But people, don't get on Steph too much. I mean, come on. Everybody, every star.
Didn't show up.
He won a ring in Cleveland before LeBron. Let's put it that way first. And let me just say this real quick. Steph Curry, they're all hating on him. He's going to improve his defense, the young kid. And he broke records this year. He's one of the best players. Going to go down as one of the best players ever. He had a bad finals.
Ever.
Who didn't have a bad finals other than Michael motherfucking Jordan? But LeBron James, you had your Jordan moment. But I got to say, as we're going to talk about it on this show today, it ain't going to be as easy next year, LeBron, because the East is starting to build up a little bit.
Yes, sir. But Ryan, real quick, I just had to get Dr. Zedward's take on this. My take was very similar. I do think Golden State was the better team, but Cleveland was the better team that night, Game 7, Ryan. I mean,
I think they were decided in Game 5.
You know,
really,
but they were injured. Bogut being out hurt a lot. Iguodala, huge with his back spasms. A guy who was the MVP last year and was literally nothing, you know, the last two games. Steph Curry was injured as well. They were worn out. You know, I think the pressure was almost too great for him, Ryan. And then when it was tied with 2 minutes left, I felt like those Cleveland players weren't going to lose. This was their one shot to bring Cleveland the championship. And I got to say, good for them. And sadly, history. But, Ryan, that Dr. Everdeen, that was the first question I did want to ask you. Just your thoughts. Do you think Golden State was the better team and Cleveland just got hot? Why did it turn out this way? What was kind of an undoing of Golden State? You know, was it something with their game plan? Were they just, you know, they had stuff. And honestly, I feel like the play that won it was that LeBron block on Iguodala was a great play, like by LeBron, and that will probably go down to the opener of the moments. But what kind of unraveling for Golden State when they two worn out beat down? And then question two, the two-parter, that double cheese, brother. What does this victory do for LeBron's legacy?
All right. So, you know, I'm going to do the quicker version because, you know, I could go on and on about this for a while. But I'm going to start with Golden State. Of course, you know, Golden State, I believe, I mean, you can't sit there and say they weren't the better team. I mean, this is a team that was champions last year. They were up 3-1, and I think actually the best team was Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City should have been in that final. So you just look at how stacked Oklahoma City is, and now more stacked, in my opinion, with that trade. But, you know, Golden State did make it through that hornet's nest that is the West. And I got to say that they were the better team, but there was a lot of things. I mean, this NBA Finals had more stories to it than a lot I can remember, a lot of blowouts and stuff like that, but the story almost made it. Yes, Golden State was the better team, but a lot of people on Golden State had key moments where they fell apart. Of course, the injuries, as Andrew already alluded to, were very, very big because with 5 minutes left in a Game 7, Cesar Cavilli should not be on the goddamn floor. Why is he on the court? So I think, number one, Steve Kerr kind of outcoached himself in that final Game 7. He did not kind of stick to his bread and butter. He did it in the first half, and his rotations were just kind of off. I think Ty Lue had it right in a Game 7. You keep your two stars in, and you motherfucking just go and try to win. I think Steve Kerr kept going like this was a series, and he had Cesar Cavilli. I mean, you put the death lineup in when basically you have 5 minutes left in the game instead of having Cesar Cavilli getting dominated on all the pick and rolls. But I think that was number one. Steve Kerr kind of outcoached himself, even though he is probably the best coach in the NBA today. Other than that, Andrew, we saw how great he played in Game 7. Draymond Green, in my opinion, probably the second best power forward in the league right now. Game 5, not having him, I think Golden State right there, the majority of the team. One, Andrew Bogut got injured in that game early. Who knows if that ever happens? If Draymond's in, I mean, who knows if we revisit history. But Draymond Green, Golden State was rolling. And without him in that game, I feel like Cavs started getting momentum. Bogut gets hurt, and then they beat down Golden State in that game. I think if Draymond plays in that game, Golden State still has the confidence. He brings so much more swagger to that team, and I think Golden State wins. After that, Draymond Green, you know, Jalen Rose, who is a huge star in the NBA and a great analyst, said it himself. It takes a couple days to get back after you get suspended. Draymond had a horrible Game 6. You know, LeBron and Kyrie were hitting their strides. I just feel like that suspension really, really hurt. You know, Golden State, I really think if Draymond plays Game 5, it's a different series. But that was his own fault. And I got to say, Ty Lue realized it. And it might have been LeBron James. It might have been Kyrie Irving. But they said, they realized it, that we're going to attack Steph Curry because every other guy on the floor is a good defender. So anytime we get a pick and roll, I saw it like a game-winning three. When there was a switch and Steph Curry was covering Kyrie Irving, who took the game-winning shot? Kyrie Irving and Steph Curry's space. They took advantage of Steph Curry. They finally found the weakness in that Golden State defense, and Golden State usually can make up with that because of Iguodala's quickness and the quickness to switch and Andrew Bogut protecting the rim and a lot of other stuff that goes into that. But I think they were too tired, trying to break the record, and too beaten up to play their usual defense. And I think Thompson, having the makeup, we saw how much he lit it up in a couple games, completely disappeared in Game 7 because he was having to make up for it so much on the defensive end. So all in all, I think Golden State definitely was the better team. But I do think they have a couple key adjustments they need to make this offseason because now you have a new champion and you have to think, how are we going to beat this team if we play them again? And there is a couple of monsters in the West waiting for them. If they do not get a guy like Kevin Durant, real quick, LeBron's legacy. Dirk would be fucking huge. And I think that's the kind of guy they got to go after. And they have to really analyze Harrison
Barnes.
They're also
going after Big Al.
Big Al, those are the kind of guys they need. I think it's time to move on from the Bogut era. I just think he's too injury-prone. And a Noah or Al Horford would fit better in that offense with their passing. But LeBron James' legacy, I'm the one that's always hating on it, but I think he's really reached that status of passing Larry Bird as the best small forward of all time. Just because this man went to Cleveland, a city that's never, and it's been so long, so fucking long, and yes, Stipe won the championship first. UFC is a sport to me, so I can't say it was LeBron first. But LeBron James not only has carried the Cavs throughout the 2000s, but went back when the Cavs were nothing and not only brought the swagger back to that team, not only brought so much money to that team, not only made the moves as a GM, also got them a new coach, made so many other moves, but all in all, beat one of the best teams ever, put it on his back, had the points, and got a third championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So bringing a championship to Cleveland, I think, in my opinion, makes him solidified best small forward ever. We'll see what Durant and Paul George have to say about that towards the end of their careers. But he passes Larry Legend, and I got to say that he is creeping on the top five. I'm not going to give him a break now, though, and say, oh, you're done, LeBron.
He's going to win two more.
Yeah, you can just rest up. No one gave Kobe Bryant that break. I know he got that one championship, but now it's time for LeBron to either start the decline of his career or go on his run because, like I said, the other teams are gearing up. But Andrew, in my opinion, he got a lot of respect from the people like me that were haters on him.
Yeah, I mean, he did earn it, I have to admit. And just the fact how he was able to turn his game around when he had a straight-up abysmal game four, and just to turn it around and, you know, the defense he played, those block shots, Kyrie stepping up and hitting the shot, it was pretty amazing. Now, Dr. Edwards, on this series, before we get into the draft or the crazy trades, the draft, and then, you know, the remaining free agency. Last question, couple questions. I did just want to throw in, you know, we really saw, you know, the small ball, that game seven really hurt Golden State with their inability to get rebounds. And I felt like Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson were just getting all the boards. Granted, I do think an injured Bogut and an injured Iguodala played in a huge factor as to why, that happened. But Ryan,
plus you got LeBron James down there rebounding.
Yeah, definitely. The question was, was Golden State too small? Is this the end of the small ball? Or do you think that, you know, just because of those injuries was the reason why, you know, they kind of got exposed? And then my last question I want to ask you, Dr. Edwards, you know, Kevin Love didn't have the best game. However, he had like 13 crucial rebounds. Now, you know, everyone's saying now, included, you know, Wiggins for Love wasn't the best trade. But the fact that, you know, they were able to win a ship, regardless what happens, even if Wiggins, you know, turns out to be the next LeBron. But the fact that they were able to win a ship with Kevin Love, and Kevin Love had some team moments. Granted, I think they could have won with Wiggins as well, swap Wiggins out for Love. I think they still could have won. But does that justify the trade, the fact that they were able to win a ship? So, and does this ship justify the Kevin Love trade?
Let me start with number two. Hell no, it does not justify the trade. Andrew Wiggins is shown that he is going to be a player that is like a once-in-a-generation type of guy. And if you look at the Cavs, this is the reason why Kevin Love will not be on the Cavaliers next year. Mark my words, he might have not got traded in the draft, but it's going to happen. I feel like it's just better. It's better for both ways, for Kevin Love and the Cavs, because throughout the series, LeBron James really, and when he was at Miami, we saw it with Shane Battier and Chris Bosh at center. LeBron James' best position right now is at the power forward. He plays his best game at power
forward.
Yeah, he plays his best game at power forward. You know, that's them going a little smaller, but if you call small fucking LeBron James, who's a tank, who's probably bigger than Kevin Love, that's not small ball. So the Cavs have the luxury of not only having a rebound machine in Tristan Thompson, but they don't even need to really get a rim protector because LeBron James is a rim protector.
Yeah.
And Tristan Thompson is good enough to be a rim protector. So with Wiggins, they would have a small forward or a shooting guard there that's just another defensive force and athlete. Kevin Love just does not have a position on this team. I know he played key moments in Game 7. Good for him. But that does not excuse the rest of the series.
Yeah.
And you can just tell by the media and the way
LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, you can just tell the media the way that everyone kind of just reacted to Kevin Love. This is a guy who's making $125 million. You've got to have more. And the Cavaliers really don't have a lot they can do other than goddamn Hawks selling them a pick that people are saying could have been the number one pick if he was a foot taller. God damn it, Hawks. Why are you giving the Cavaliers anything? But they don't have a lot of flexibility unless they do get rid of Kevin Love. They already have Tristan Thompson and LeBron James, so there's really no need for Kevin Love. And then the small ball era, I got to say this. For all the people who talk about small ball, let's look at the teams that finished up the season kind of in the final four. KC, Steven Adams, Ibaka. I know Kevin Durant, you know, played key minutes at the four, but that team has big players. Golden State, Andrew Bogut, we saw what happened when they lost him. He is a key person on that team, and now they're looking at centers and guys like Dirk Nowitzki. So another team with a good big. Cavaliers, Tristan Thompson, LeBron James. I mean, they might be a smaller team, but they still have big players. And Tristan Thompson is not a stretch center by any means. And then, of course, Toronto with, you know, Bismack Biyombo and whoever the fuck, Valencia, whatever his name is, at center. So you look at the final four, all those teams have bigs. I feel like the way that you have... You have to have your traditional center. Really, other than that, it's positionless basketball. You have to have your point guard, and you have to have your traditional center. And then the rest of the positions are kind of interversible. Like, you have LeBron who can play anywhere. Giannis can play anywhere. Paul George can play anywhere. You just want a lot of wing 3-and-D type players. But I feel like every team needs that center and that point guard. Then you need a lineup where you can go to where you can play small ball. So I think you need both to be a championship team in today's NBA. But I think all this talk about how the traditional center is done is bullshit because let's use Philly as an example. All Philly has to do is move some of those centers, keep some of them, and then find a way to have a small ball lineup they can utilize at the end of the day and then utilize their centers throughout most of the game. Plus, they're taking away the hack-a-shack rule, which really took, you know, DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard out of games a lot with their free throw shooting. With that rule leaving, centers are going to be a lot bigger.
Oh, yeah, Ryan. And then to move it on, you know, we won't touch on this. At the end of the day, congratulations to the Cavaliers.
Congratulations to the city of Cleveland.
Yeah, congratulations to the city of Cleveland.
I mean, a million people showing up to the parade.
They deserved it. They deserved it. But, Ryan, next thing I got to bring up, and before we get into the draft and free agencies, we should hit, you know, the couple of big trades that happened.
This one
that happened last night, I don't know. First of all, I don't know what the fuck the Magic were thinking. I think this was a terrible trade.
Bill Simmons said somebody call the cops.
The Magic, though, was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
And Ibaka's a free agent next year.
Exactly. It wasn't even a sign of trade. So they give up, first of all, on the Magic's end, I think Oladipo for Ibaka straight up is a straight up all right player swap.
Great trade.
That they threw in Sabonis from Gonzaga, now an elite, their number 8 pick. So it was like they gave up Oladipo the number 8 pick, and then they gave up that big foreign guy who
Billy,
I believe was the top.
Who can hit threes.
Yeah,
and
he's
a
top draft pick, too.
He's a four-man Ibaka, but can start. You know,
yeah.
Like he's not far behind Ibaka. You know,
and
as far as you would think.
Definitely, man. And they throw in Sabonis, the number 8 pick, who might have been the best rebounder on the draft.
Yeah, who was a really good player. Really good player.
To add with Stephen, the Australian Stephen Adams.
And adding Oladipo,
first of all, this just made me sad. I know the Magic wanted Paul Millsap.
I wanted Oladipo on all my teams.
I don't want to talk about that, but kudos to OKC. I don't know how their GM does it, but he's not afraid to make moves, and he always makes good moves.
He makes some moves or good moves?
I think this is a great move. I think it helped justify the James Harden losing him for nothing. When you turn around and got the number 2 player in the draft. First of all,
yep.
Ryan, let's just imagine that. First thing I wanted to touch on, how nasty Oklahoma City's backcourt is going to be.
Maybe most athletic ever.
Russell Westbrook and Victor Oladipo locking down. First of all, also, if I was a Magic fan, I would. I don't know, man. I might not be. You don't trade Victor Oladipo for an old Serge Ibaka, who is going to hit free agency after this year.
And Dwight Howard wanted to come
stay.
Home. Reports are you maybe could have got Dwight Howard back as a free
that
agent.
That was retarded. But Ryan, on this trade, first of all, I want to ask you: does this move, was this a move you think it will positively or negatively affect Kevin Durant? Who won the trade? And, what are you expecting, from the Magic? Where do you see both teams going forward with this? We'll try and blaze through this one. Just, coming up under 30-minute warning. And we got a couple other trades. But, Ryan, let me just get, a quick summary. Who won? Who lost? Where do both teams go from here? What do you see the players producing for both teams?
Definitely Oklahoma City won this trade big time. First off, you get a player that not only is good, but is great in Oladipo. He was on a bad team, so he didn't get the shine that most people get. But he can turn into a Jimmy Butler, or he could even be there next year with the guys he's going to have around him. And not only that, he's an insurance policy if Westbrook does end up leaving, because he can do a lot of the stuff Westbrook does. But next year, you're going to have Westbrook and Oladipo in your backcourt.
And,
instead
Ryan,
of having,
there was rumors that Serge was going to leave. Sorry, I had to throw that in there. The fact that
Oladipo
for a player that was probably going to leave regardless.
Yeah, and, Serge was unhappy, which, there was rumors that maybe affected that locker room. Which, not only is Oladipo a great player, but he's also from Washington, and he's friends with Kevin Durant. I mean, do you get more of a slam dunk than bringing one of Kevin Durant's friends in? I don't see any way Kevin Durant now will leave this team with just such a lethal combination at the guards position. I mean, let's picture them against Golden State with the lineup they now have. They would have had Oladipo.
Hello?
Three. He can go.
Ryan.
Albert. Yo, you there?
You're cutting in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Basically what I was saying is you have Oladipo who can play not only the 2, the 1, but also the 3. If they want him to come off the bench and be the next James Harden of, that team they used to have, he can also do that. They also have homeboy, I forget his name, but he's a great defender. And this makes it where they don't have to pay overpay Dion Waiters, who is going to be a free agent. But let's picture OKC with this lineup against Golden State. Basically what I was saying is, slot in Oladipo instead of Ibaka. People talk about Oladipo and Westbrook's 3-point shooting. I'm sorry, those guys are going to be able to score.
Roberson isn't a a shooting guard on a starting shooting guard on a championship basketball team. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and Robertson, though, you can win as a small forward and have Kevin Durant play the power forward in a small ball lineup, which could turn out to be deadly for Oklahoma City next year. They also have Enes Kanter and Adams still, but they want to go big. Then they also got Illy. So if you want to talk about three-point shooting, if Kevin Durant stays, you have Illy who can shoot the three ball from the four. You have Kevin Durant who can shoot the three ball. And then you have two-way killers on the other side with Oladipo and Westbrook. And then you still have Adams inside who proved he can hold it down pretty much by himself. And Ibaka had a meltdown versus Golden State. He was not a player in that series throughout. It was really the Durant-Westbrook show. Now they, in my opinion, have a really great big three. And
yeah.
I think this is a slam dunk for OKC. And I got to say, the Magic, it just doesn't make sense to me why you get rid of Oladipo. You could have maybe got a Paul Millsap. Yeah, for less. I mean, the Magic, they do have a lot of talented players. Maybe this was a sign that they're picking Payton over Oladipo.
Tobias Harris and Oladipo, so dumb.
Yeah, and really not getting much for them. I know they have Brandon Jennings, but he can bolt in free agency. Like, there's not a lot of justification for why the Atlanta Magic did this because, you know, as good as Ibaka is, he is not the traditional – I mean, he is a rim protector, but he's a power forward. They still kind of need to even still get bigger, and they got rid of a guy that they traded for, Tobias Harris, that is a great player in Illy. And Tobias Harris was a great player. So it just seems like they're moving pieces that just don't make sense to me. So I don't get it for the Magic, especially giving up the pick, too. I know Ibaka gets a lot of talk in the league, but he is not good enough to give up all those riches.
Yeah, Ryan. That's three, you know, top 10 draft picks. And then, of course, you know, the Magic were one of my big losers. And then, you know, right behind them was the Sacramento Kings.
This is a sign or what that somebody is going to get Marcus Cousins this off.
Yeah, they need to trade him or that boy is going to walk. Ryan, real quick, the next trade, we have to bring it up because it's so huge. We were rejoicing as people who like the New York Knicks, but shocking news pretty much broke the internet. There were rumors that the Bulls might have shot Jimmy Butler. They didn't, which I think is extremely smart. That's the player you need to keep and try and build around again. But Derrick Rose has been traded to the New York Knicks. First of all, what does this say about Chicago? They're kind of getting weary now in that no man's land, you know, just partially blowing up the team. And, you know, the Knicks, great trade. They just dumped some subpar players off. How big of a move is this for the Knicks, real quick?
This is huge because this shows that the Knicks are not trying to rebuild. This shows Carmelo Anthony, there is a reason to stay in New York. And this gives New York fans a reason to be really excited. Everyone can be down on
games and buy tickets.
Yeah, for real. I mean, the Garden's going to fill up no matter what, I know. But come on, you go from Pablo Prigioni to Derrick Rose as your starting point guard. There's no way this is a downside. And this is a one-year rental. They're going to have Derrick Rose's bird rights. But if they want to get rid of him after this year, Ken, and don't forget, Derrick Rose is a guy who almost beat LeBron in the 2014 playoffs, hitting that game winner and pushing it to game six. And he's never had weapons offensively like Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis around him. Don't sleep on Derrick Rose. And I love how the Knicks, basically, they got a robbery in this. Robin Lopez, I don't know what the hype is about him. He did not play well with Porzingis. And I got to say that not only does this show that, you know, the Knicks are trying to win, but this is also going to lure another big-name free agent. The Knicks did not leave their center position open for no reason. Joakim Noah is from New York. He loves Derrick Rose. He also is good friends with Carmelo Anthony, and also Dwight Howard wants to go there. So I don't care how many players are out there. If you have a hungry Dwight Howard or Joakim Noah with Carmelo Anthony, one of the best scorers maybe ever, I got to say that he is one of the best scorers ever. Kristaps Porzingis, who can play center, he can play almost any position on the court. Derrick Rose, who you know is going to be hungry to prove himself. And bringing in like a Dwight Howard or a Noah that need to prove themselves too, this is the all we need to come back and fucking be beastly team. And if you look at that team on paper, I'm sorry, there's no way unless there's huge injuries, which of course is a risk, that this team will not be a contender in the Eastern Conference. And at the end of the day, that is what the New York Knicks fans want. Phil Jackson definitely got a big deal. And Derrick Rose is still a big deal.
Oh, yeah, Ryan, I love it. And then, you know, keep moving along. Ryan, the other, you know, big trade we have to touch on. First of all, the Pacers, the moves they made.
The Pacers are coming
first of all, real
quick,
I gotta say. Utah, first of all, finally getting a true point guard in George Hill. And now,
that team's got to be a playoff team now.
Definitely, you trade for a player like George Hill when you're on the cusp of a playoff, and I feel like them getting him, you know, as a true point guard, and then, you know, you feel like you could maybe shop one of the two, probably Trey Burke, shop him or X him. From the Atlanta Hawks side, I said, Ryan, as you know, I was a Hawks fan. At first, I was pissed, but, I mean, granted, the writing was on the wall. If we wanted to give Dennis Schroeder a shot, which I felt like we needed to do, I mean, because we're never going to win it all with Teague. However, I can't talk too much crap. I got to see, you know, some other moves they make in free agency, who, you know, who we in the product on the court. However, I would have liked to seen us trade Paul Millsap for Oladipo, and I would have liked to see that, but that's a story from another time. However, we were able to get. Finally, we drafted a wing. However, in typical Hawks fashion, the player wanted at 21 was, you know, Malik Beasley. He went to Denver. Great pick. I'm just pissed off. Just another player, though, I like just going to a team I have zero interest in, which is the Denver Nuggets. I don't know why. I just don't really like that team. But, Ryan, from the Pacers' standpoint, first of all, they bring in the guy who almost beat them the year they were the number one seed, a very dynamic point guard. He played, I feel like this hurt the Hawks too, when he tweeted he played the whole year with the torn patella. He's about to be 28, so we'll see. I still feel like Jeff Teague has a good 4 or 5 years left.
He's a legit point guard you want in this league.
He's a great switch in this point guard. He's great offense, great on pick and rolls. Very quick, agile guy. And then to add Thaddeus Young as well on the team, taking him from the Brooklyn Nets for the 20th pick. Great move. So, Ryan, real quick, what are your thoughts on the Pacers? How good did they get with these two trades? I feel like they're still a couple moves away from being there, but, you know, rolling out Paul George, Jeff T, Thaddeus Young, Miles Turner, what are your thoughts? Monte Ellis. What are your thoughts on the Pacers? What are some moves you think they're going to do? What are your thoughts? How big was this for Indiana?
This was huge for Indiana. I do got to say, I think Atlanta needs to make other moves. If they were to make this move, I don't think
about
you keep
that.
About to be
a 5-minute warning, bro.
All right. I don't think you keep the rest of that team intact if you make a move like that. I think you got to make other moves. But I don't want to be too bad on your Hawks. I'll go easy. So I'll concentrate on the Pacers. You got to upgrade at the point guard position. Any way you look at it, Jeff Teague's from Indiana. He is a better point guard than George Hill. He can hit the three. Monte Ellis, of course, can get buckets in a minute, and he is also a tradable asset that can still utilize. And when it comes down to it, Andrew, Paul George is a guy that pushed the Miami Heat's big three with Roy Hibbert and Lance Stephenson. This guy is a top five player if he is playing at his best. He's hitting his prime. He's getting over his injury. he was averaging, I think, almost 28 points a game last year and got a really shitty team into the playoffs. And now you upgrade him with a guy, Thaddeus Young, that Brooklyn at one point said they wanted to build their team around. Thaddeus Young is a great player. Can play small forward, can play power forward. This team can go small, they can go big. They have a true center now. And Ian Mahimi still, they can re-sign, who's another good center. But Miles Turner is the future there. And really what they needed is a upgrade at that point guard position, a guy that can hit the pick and rolls with Paul George. What it's going to come down to, Andrew, of course, key bench moves, maybe a Jamal Crawford type guy that can come off the bench and score with a second unit. They need to build that second unit. But I think this propelled the Pacers to the top, three seeds of the Eastern Conference, and a team that really can push Cavaliers if they start clicking. Of course, they got rid of Frank Vogel. We'll see how that turns out, but I think it is the time to do that. This team needs to play fast, and let's look at the lineup. I mean, they are going to play fast. That's how Larry Bird wants them to play. And like I said, they have Paul George. Anytime you have a player like Paul George, whoever you surround him with, especially guys like Thaddeus Young and Jeff Teague, you are a contender.
I think,
ladies and gentlemen, don't sleep on it. If LeBron James ages a little bit in this offseason, I know Kyrie's still there, but the Pacers, if they upgrade their bench and Paul George plays like the real Paul George, my new favorite player, the Pacers can definitely push the Cavs as a team that maybe could even take that next step just a few pieces away.
Oh, yeah, Ryan, I completely agree. Gotta love seeing Larry make this move. Real quick before we cut off, first of all, this draft, there are a lot of good talent. There's a lot of good
Lakers.
Going on, so first two picks, the three best players went in the
Boston was the big failure to me.
I like the move, but they did need to ship some of those other assets they have. You know, we keep thinking when's going to happen, but Jaylen Brown is a hell of a small forward. Actually, I was reading the Hawks plan. I think, I don't know, because there were drafts all over the place. I think they were praying that he would have fell to eight of the Kings and we would have traded those two picks for him. Well, it didn't happen. I'm on it. Move on. But, Brian, first of all, so I get why Philly took Ben Simmons. I mean, this is a guy who has been hyped up forever. When it came time to shit or get
this
off
the
pot,
draft, you want to draft number two.
It really is. We'll see. And honestly, I think, you know,
because you have to take Ben Simmons, and he's a higher risk.
And, I mean, honestly, Ryan, I feel like this draft, too, just like last year, couple very great, talented players. This one, too. Ben Simmons, his athleticism is almost like LeBron James. However, he has no shot. But Brandon Ingram, this is a player, Ryan, that you know, we were talking about this before. I had been higher on Ingram for a while now. The first time I saw him, you know, it's like, oh, my God, who is this guy?
He's special.
6'7", shot almost 40% from three, Ryan. Ooh, 6'10", shot. That's right, he was 6'9", shot almost 40% from three. The guy has amazing offense.
At the highest level at Duke.
Oh, yeah, and he does. He looks just like, you know, Kevin Durant with some dreads. But Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram, Ryan, two hell of a players. As a Lakers fan, I got to ask you, give me the state of L.A. What's your thoughts with the teams right now? What moves would you like to see? Such a young, talented core. You know, you got to think the sky's the limit. Would you want to try and keep those young pieces and trying to add a free agent? Or, you know, you guys have so much young talent. Is it time to move one of those guys for an established veteran? Or do you let them grow, kind of build together? Because you have to think, they're going to be pretty goddamn spectacular in about two or three years once they mature and learn to play together. Maybe even sooner. But the ceiling level for those players is unbelievable.
not only that, but we have Luke Walton, who proved that he is such a great up-and-coming coach.
Oh,
he's going to know exactly what to do with these guys. Don't be surprised if he can turn a Randall, who's already a great player, into a Draymond Green-type talent. But basically, the Lake Show, I mean, at every position other than center, which we need to address in free agency, which we have the most cap room, we could sign 3 max players if we want to. I think the Lakers need to sign, you know, they need to either go after veterans like Big Al or Nicholas Batum, or they need to, you know, a DeMar DeRozan, you know, obviously he's from L.A., but don't overspend just to overspend. Don't waste your time on the biggest names. You need to go out there